All right, we're back on the Hurry Up. Or hold on, sorry. I said we're back on the Hurry Up, but I said I was going to do this, so I'm actually going to do it.
The Hurry Up's going to help us.
I agree, Coach O. Hurry Up is going to help us.
Hurry Up's going to help everybody.
Two shout-outs for the Hurry Up in today's post-game podcast after LSU beat Central Michigan 49-21. Do I have the score right? You know, it's like the most important thing, and I never know it like with 100% confidence when we're starting, unless it's a super tight game. 49-21, I tuned out at about, I don't know, start of the fourth quarter maybe. Didn't necessarily tune out, but really had all my takes prepared by then and just kind of enjoyed the ride down the stretch. But Hester, it was, as we said up well, before we get to the game, first, I have to compliment the shirt. We have to talk about the shirt because before the game, you were a team captain. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
The 18s on the 18th, you, Christian Lockature.
And Benny Logan.
And Benny Logan were the three captains and guest captains. And all of a sudden, I see from the LSU football account, I can't see from the press box what you're wearing. I could tell that it wasn't purple and black, which we talked about last week, and I was disappointed. But I will make an exception because the shirt you're wearing is exceptional and deserves an exception. So let's talk about the shirt. It's got the LSU soccer crest on there, a little white, a little gold. I know you've been getting blown up on Twitter. So let's just start at the beginning. Tell me the story of the shirt.
All right. So we are guest captains, you know, the 18s. And I found out that Benny Logan was going to wear a NOLA baseball jersey. And that's the way he wanted to roll out there. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. I always like when other, you know, Tigers support sports that they don't play. And obviously, you know, we talk soccer on this podcast. And I'm a giant soccer fan. Coach Hudson is a family friend.
Shout out to the LSU soccer team.
Without question.
You're in the middle of a shout-out. I interrupted your shout-out to give them a secondary shout-out.
Hey, we'll give them as many as they need. So I said, you know what? I want to definitely give them a shout-out because they're number six in the country. They just beat Mississippi State 2-0 and in their first SEC match.
Go Sacero.
So here's what I did. Okay, so I had the crest. It's kind of like a stick-on. It's not really an iron-on, but it's a stick-on. So I had that, and I said, I'm going to create a shirt. So I go, and I find a polo that has no other logo outside of the Nike swoosh. It didn't have an LSU yet because it was fresh out of the box. And I find a heat press. And so I find a heat press machine, even though it's not supposed to be heat pressed on there. I find the machine, and I go, and I heat press this LSU, beautiful LSU crest, the new crest, on this polo. And I was like, you know what? That looks kind of good. It looks like kind of like the Dreamsicle USA jerseys, but just in LSU colors. So I go out, and I didn't think that it was going to be that big of a deal. I'm just supporting the soccer team, as we've all come to love, you know, the form that they're in, and didn't know that it was going to blow up like that.
And it blew up.
And it blew up, and now people are tweeting me, where do I get this? I don't have them for sale. They're not for sale. I literally got a polo, a crest, and a heat iron press on, whatever you want to call this machine, and I just threw it all together so I could support the soccer team.
It's time for some Hey Fightin' Podcast merch, and ironically enough, we're going to start with the LSU football team instead of the LSU football team, I guess. It's a sweet shirt. We need to, as soon as we're done, we're going to go walk down to marketing. I'm sure Dave Haskins in his office, and we're going to talk about selling these shirts to the people and selling the kits, which we talked about with Coach
Please,
Hudson.
Please, let's sell the kits. We will raise some good revenue for the program.
All right, so let's talk about the football game. It was a fun one. Finally, we needed something fun to talk about because after week one, it's a loss. You know, it's not a whole lot of fun to do. The second week, a win, but not a great performance. And I said last week, you know, we played the like it, love it, leave it, learn it. I don't remember.
Loathe.
A bunch of L's.
Loathe. One of them,
yeah,
Loathe sure
was in there. We played that game last week, and I talked about the atmosphere and how great the atmosphere was, and then the game just didn't quite live up to it for me. Today was a little bit of the opposite. The atmosphere was a little bit less enthusiastic. Second game of the season as opposed to first. The weather forecast was not great, although the weather ended up being really nice. Not a non-conference foe that, you know, doesn't generate a ton of excitement. And then the fact that LSU hasn't played its best football in the first 2 weeks. And so it all combined for not the greatest Tiger Stadium. We can say that. Greatest Tiger Stadium atmosphere ever. However, the performance was fantastic for the most part. Not perfect, but a lot of exciting things. So instead of playing the L word game like we played last week, we're just going to do general word association. Okay. I have some words prepared. I don't know if you do or not, if you're ready to freestyle off the top of the dome.
Oof, we'll see about this.
But first word of the day for you, or do I need to lead off?
Yeah, well, let's see. Whatever. Just throw me a fastball. We'll see.
First word of the day for you. No, you just got to throw. We're not doing word association. Sorry. This is a failure on my part. We're not doing word association. What I mean is you're going to tell me a word, and then we're going to say why that's a word that you associate with this game. That's how words.
See, I thought we were going player. Yeah, you're gonna give me a player.
It could evolve that way.
Maybe like a scheme and like
it could evolve that way.
What you think of this?
We're adapting on the fly.
Okay, so I'm Jake one Peets. Word.
I'm looking at the personnel that we have on this podcast. Okay. I'm trying to scheme to the best.
One word to describe how I feel about this game.
Yeah,
tempo.
Tempo. Okay,
that's my word because it sets up all the success for not only the offense but for the defense as well. To me, tempo is a word of this game because everything they did out there tonight looked fast. It was fast getting to the line. The receivers looked fast. Corey Kiner looked fast. The scheme looked fast because everybody was playing a different brand out there. And on first and second down, you saw LSU's offense just get up and go. And with their success, what does that create? Well, it creates tempo for the defense because they're in the game. They're enthused. They're out there playing with their hair on fire. So for me, the tempo that LSU's offense had tonight sets up the defensive success as well because everybody's in the same flow of the game. It's hurry up. Let's go get it. So for me, one word, tempo.
So I tracked the tempo of the first couple of drives. I'll just focus on the first drive because that's the scripted one, right? That's the one that you come out, you're prepared. And LSU averaged 15.1 seconds left on the play clock per play on the first drive. Now, that number in and of itself may not mean a lot to a lot of people, and it's a small sample size, but for the season coming in, LSU was at about 12.1 seconds. So, excuse me, they were at 16.1 seconds. I got my number wrong. 16.1 seconds average tonight. They were 12.1 coming in, so they were 4 seconds faster.
Yeah.
And that's not including, like, first down, play clock starts at 25. There's no point in going hurry up on first down, like the first play of the series. Okay, that's dumb. Then a lot of times on third down, you're kind of, you know, you're not really hurrying up there. So you're kind of picking your spots. Even then, the tempo was increased. I see there's one snap where LSU snapped it with 25 seconds on the play clock, one with 22, one with 18, a couple with 11. So they were certainly...
And the early downs, they were certainly going with a better tempo.
They were
than
going
they
with
have,
a better yeah. tempo. Even on the second drive, LSU, the first drive was great. And I'll talk about another word in a second, especially on the first drive and the first few drives. But even on the second drive where they kind of stumbled and faltered, there were a couple penalties and there was even a delay of game. And you could see Max like motioning, get the play in faster. And so you could tell that was clearly a point of emphasis all week, and we saw it today. And it got them in a really, really good rhythm and made them the dictators rather than the dictated to. Dictators probably isn't the best choice of words there. They're not like the dictator
they
of a country.
They dictated the speed of the game.
They dictated to. They were not dictated
there you go.
To or upon.
You're supposed to be the wordsmith here.
I know. Gosh.
Not me.
Okay. Well,
or
in
not
that
I.
case.
See, exactly.
So tempo was your word. My word is exuberance.
See, again.
Wordsmith. And what I mean by exuberance is youthful exuberance because the young Bucks stepped up today. And I was thrilled to see it from start to finish. I'm kind of marveling here because I have the press conference playing silently in the background just to see who's talking. Usually it's a couple guys here and there. Jack Besh is doing the press conference today, which shocks me, not because Jack Besh is not fantastic with the media. He's a true freshman. True freshmen traditionally don't do media at LSU.
Right.
Jack Besh is not your traditional freshman with LSU. What did he finish with? 5 catches, 81 yards? Did he add to that at any point?
Yeah, he had 5 for 81.
5 for 81 and a touchdown. I think all in the first half. And at one point, you know, when you take those stats and what had happened in the season prior, it's like 13 targets on the season for him, 10 catches, 155 yards, a touchdown. Throw Jack Besh the ball and good things happen. He was just one of those, though. Deion Smith came out of the gates on fire. He finished with, let me pull up the stats here, 5 catches, 135 yards, 2 touchdowns on 6 targets. Even Kayshawn Boutte, true sophomore, Max Johnson, true sophomore. But the fourth quarter revelation was Corey Kiner, and I'll let you wax poetic on him. But just to see what we've been asking for the first couple of weeks is juice. I want to see some juice. I want to see some swagger. I want to see... some guys just go and ball and dominate. And it was the freshmen and the young guys that did that today. So to see that, like it's already exciting when you see something new and novel and
right.
it's it happens in soccer all the time, right? Like, we buy a, you buy a player, like Arsenal buys a new player, and you're like, he's the best player ever. And then 6 months later, you're like,
I don't know if I'd use Arsenal as
I would absolutely
example here of buying players and it working extremely fast. You get Ronaldo to Man United, and that works. He scores 2 goals in the first game.
Gross. Any team that you support, the Pelicans, whoever, the Braves, you get a new player, the new shiny toy, it's exciting. This is a little bit of that, but it's also seeing, like, questions answered. What were the questions that we needed answered? Second wide receiver, running back. Well, okay, questions answered. Deion Smith and Jack Besh are answering that question for second wide receiver. In fact, they're fighting each other tooth and nail for that spot. And then Corey Kiner at running back. So there are other questions with this team, but to see especially those three skill guys step up and perform the way they did, super exciting.
It's amazing to see, and tempo was my word, because it's amazing to see true freshmen play this fast. Because typically you know what you're doing, sort of. You have a general idea of what the concept is. It's more memorization than actually knowing the offense. And so you're not as fast as you are the next year in your sophomore season. Because then you know it. Then you go full speed. And your freshman year, I mean, even the greats. Like, let's take Ja'Marr Chase. Like, Ja'Marr's freshman year was so talented that they had to play him in certain spots because you couldn't deny his talent, but you could tell like he was just trying to figure it out, okay? Uh-huh. And he got in the red zone because he was such, you know, an elite weapon down there. And it's just, that's a position that can be difficult to learn. But these coaches have actually done a really nice job, and Mickey's done a nice job of getting these guys up to speed because they're playing full speed as true freshmen. And typically you just don't see that. And then think about Jack Besh. Jack had never played tight end in his life. Now, he's kind of a hybrid tight end receiver here at LSU, but he's doing a lot of things within the hashes, inside the box. He's running a lot of his routes from there as well.
I'm going to interrupt you because my favorite play of the game from Jack Besh was not the touchdown, although the touchdown was incredible. Even more incredible was Bill Frank as his son in the background emotionally reacting to it and the way that we all reacted to it and then going viral on it. Shout out to the Frankes family. My favorite play from Jack Besh was the third down that he converted right before Deion Smith's touchdown. And when you go back and watch film this week, Hester, you're gonna weep tears of joy like Joey Mulinaro weeped tears of joy when the Tigers came out. Maybe we could.
You talking about when he was inside in the bunch?
He was inside in the bunch. What did he do?
So I'm trying to think what the coverage was. I'll have to go back and watch the film there.
Don't even worry about the coverage. The first thing he did was he chipped the end and smacked the crap out of him. I was trying to think of, like, smack the crap sounds kind of corny. He popped him. Okay, he popped the end coming off the edge.
We used to call that got a dozen ribs.
He got a dozen ribs. He may have got two dozen ribs.
Yeah.
He put a lick on the defensive end, which LSU needs, especially at that left tackle spot. Absolutely. They need some help there. Then he got to the chains. Then he caught the pass.
Yeah.
And then he got 5 extra yards and put his head down and pushed the pile forward.
Right.
Like, that was it for me. I was sold on Jack Besh a long time ago, but, like, at that point, I'm all in. I'm pushing all my chips in.
And not to brag, did call that. Called
you
them
did.
Going to Besh on the third down. You can back it up with equipment manager Eric Cookmar. Shout out. Another Arsenal fan. Can't believe there's two in the world.
you called Besh in the fall. Like, you were on him in the fall, and I was like, well, okay, like, I want to see it first. Sorry, my bad.
No, so mea culpa. I don't remember where I said this, but Jack Besh to me, and obviously you could throw some other guys in this argument, Jack Besh to me was the best player in the state of Louisiana in high school football for 2 straight years. Now, if we're talking about Vermont or Maine or Delaware or Washington or Idaho, whatever, that doesn't mean anything. But in Louisiana, by God, that means something, and it means a lot to me because of the brand of football played in high school in the state of Louisiana. And if you are the best guy at the highest level for 2 straight years, you're doing something. You're a guy. No, slash that. You're not a guy. You're a dude.
You're a dude.
Okay. You've
graduated from guy to dude.
Exactly. And then once I heard that he was like willing to move to tight end because he just wanted to play, I'm like, oh my God, like sign me up for all of this.
Yep.
And then you go out there in the practice and you see it, and you can see it slowly coming every single day that he was getting more comfortable with the position that he was playing. And obviously, like, he's got two uncles that played at LSU. He gets it. He knows what this is all about. So it wasn't very difficult to see, like, if he had the opportunity, he was going to be that. So that's why when he started the UCLA game, I'm like, okay, he's going to get this opportunity. He had a big catch in that game, and obviously, you know, he's grown every single week since then, but he's a guy that LSU's certainly going to count on here down the stretch, and he'll do whatever you ask him to. He'll do the dirty work. He'll do cutting off the backside of his own. Go back, and we'll watch the tape before we get back on Tuesday. go back. There was one of Deion Smith's catches where Jack Besh is kind of in the middle of the field. Maybe he's by the hash. Deion catches the ball, and he just sprinting. He's sprinting to clean up somebody to try to spring his boy for a touchdown.
Yep.
Right? And those are things you can't coach those things. You can't put a value on those things when they're all in. You know what I'm saying? They're just all into the team. It doesn't have to be about me. It doesn't have to be about how great I am. It's what can I do to help the team? And you're going to see that. You're going to go back and watch the tape later tonight or maybe tomorrow, and you're going to be like, chart just how many times you saw things like that, not only from Jack, but he definitely stood out.
You know what else it is? It's all in for the team. It's also a passion for the game. Different athletes express this in different ways, right? Like there's some guys who, you know, in basketball, they take a charge and they dive on the floor for loose balls. In football, you know, it's that. It's the sprint. It's the sprinting behind the play. It's, whatever the hustle looks like in that form. But there's also a love for the game, too. And so, when I think of that, I think of Justin Jefferson. Like, Justin Jefferson, like, you wouldn't look at him and be like, the ultimate team player. Not that he's, like, a selfish guy at all, but that's not the characteristic you first identify with him. But you think that guy loved the game, and so he was always going hard because he just loved playing football. And so there's a little bit of that, too. I want to revisit Jack Besh in maybe three or four words down the line, because I have a word that will introduce one talking point on Jack Besh that I think, unless you follow me on Twitter, you're not going to be expecting. That's a tease for later.
Okay.
Let's talk about the two other freshmen, though, Deion Smith and Corey Kiner, and I'll let you take it in either order, or you can do them both right now, because I already mentioned the stats with Deion Smith. Kiner was also fantastic, not mostly in the fourth quarter, because he did some stuff before that as well, but I'm pulling up the rushing stats here. He finished with 12 carries, 74 yards, along a 26, a couple runs in the fourth quarter, including I think it was like a 22 or 24 yarder,
26 yard on the stiff arm.
Yeah, and there was nothing there.
Nothing.
There was nothing there, and all of a sudden he's got a 26 yarder, and then he comes back with a spin move near the goal line to score. So I guess I've teed you up for Corey Kiner there. So start with Kiner.
So to run the ball in that situation is the hardest time to run the ball. They know you're trying to get out of here. You're up big. You're going to run the football, whatever. But he doesn't have to have it blocked perfectly, right? And he can, in those situations, still thrive because he's a patient runner and he is smooth. Think Le'Veon Bell. Like when Le'Veon Bell was in his heyday, he was so good because he didn't just hit the hole with his head down and try to pick up 3 yards. He was patient, right? He allowed the play to develop. He saw, okay, who's got their block, who doesn't have their block, and he's athletic enough to be able to create a play off that. And it's just, there's a smoothness to it that I see from Kiner. And when he can do things like the stiff arm and then pick up 26 yards and then a play where it looks like he's going to be stopped on the 5-yard line, hits a spin move and scores – like you never want to compare him to anybody, but that's what Clyde was so good at. And I'm not comparing him to Clyde.
You sound like Coach O. Coach O literally just said that.
Well, the thing that Clyde was so good at was making a big run off of nothing.
Yes.
And out of nothing. Because there's some running backs, and look, I'll raise my hand the highest. Like if it was blocked a certain way, I was going to read my keys, and I was going to pick up. If 7 yards was there, then I'm going to take the 7 yards. There's some backs that can create that 7 yards on their own, because of how athletic and how smooth they truly are. And if you think you got them, you don't, because they're going to make you look foolish. And they're almost like playing backyard football at an elite level.
Yep.
And Corey has that, and he gets it. If you ever have the opportunity to sit down with Corey Kiner and you're sitting there talking to him for an hour, you're going to walk away and say, that might be the most impressive young man I've ever talked to. And I mean that. And I told the story on the podcast, I think. The first time I met him, I'm sitting there talking with him, and he's going to study hall. I was like, oh, how's school going? He goes, no, I'm not in school yet, but I just want to get an idea of what study hall is all about and figure it out so I can learn and already be ready when I do start school. I'm like, wait a minute. So you're going to study hall and you're not enrolling classes yet because you want to get a game plan of how study hall goes? He goes, yes, sir. He called me sir. I'm like, oh, a little old here. But I was like, that's the most impressive thing I've ever heard. I mean, he was so
super impressive.
He was so sharp. And, you know, this is before he even put a helmet on. So you figure things out like that, and you're like, okay, I'm getting why he's having success, because he is all in. He's buying in. It's kind of what I talked about with the other offensive weapons. So I like his running style, and there's no secret. We've talked about the offensive line struggles and the injuries and all the things. So you might have to have a back like that. You have to have a guy that can create on his own. It doesn't have to be blocked perfectly. Certainly the long 26-yard run wasn't. There was a guy right there in the line of scrimmage. What's he do? Throws him to the ground. makes another guy miss a tackle. He splits two defenders, and he's off to the races for an explosive play. That is something that you can't coach, can't teach, and Clyde had so much of it, maybe more so than any back I've seen, you know, in recent memory, right? So if you can get that and you can couple it with the other backs, certainly Armani Goodwin is someone we want to see more of when he's fully healthy. We saw him in a short sample size last week. So I love it, man. Young guys that don't care. The stage isn't too big. It's almost like they don't know enough to know it's a big stage. They're just out there playing football.
Couple of Corey Kiner thoughts. One, you talked about his patience. He's both patient, and then he has the ability to hit the hole very quickly with a variety of footwork styles. So, you know, a lot of guys, they wait, but they've only really got one or two, I would call them footwork techniques. You would know the technical terminology, but they're shufflers or they're shuffle, sprint. Again, I go back to a third down play like I did with Besh. He had a third down pickup, I think, on the first drive. No, it wasn't the first drive, but it was a little bit later. It was a third and two that he picked up, and he did that. He shuffled, and then he kind of – there was really no hole there, and so he's running behind the right tackle, and all of a sudden a little hole appears, and he just does this very subtle kind of 1-2-3 with his feet, keeping his momentum going forward. He didn't have to stop to cut. But he changed direction very, very fluidly. He gets 5 yards. Yeah. A hole just developed, and he hit it. So he had both the vision to see that the hole was coming and then the footwork to get there, which is a lethal combo. And so the phrase that came to my mind is one that my dad taught me growing up with basketball. It was be quick, but don't hurry. And that's Corey Kiner. He's not in a hurry, but he's quick. And so when he needs to get there, he can. So that was the first thought on Kiner. The other thing was, you know, you talked about the kind of guy he is. I'm a huge proponent of the way you do one thing is the way you do everything. Yep. And so if you're going to be enthusiastic and proactive about going to study hall before you're enrolled in class, that's how you're going to approach everything you do in your life. And that's authentic. Like, that's real. Like, if you – some people talk the talk and oh, I'm going to get extra reps, or I'm going to be in – you know, catching extra passes or – throw an extra whatever, and some people walk the walk. That's walking the walk. So that's super impressive to me. And then I'll transition to Deion Smith with this. What I love about these three guys, anybody, and this ties into one of your talking points too. Anybody can take what they're given. Anyone can take what the defense gives them. The rare skill and the valuable skill is to be able to take what you want.
Yeah.
And Besh did that today with his one-handed touchdown grab. Kiner did that today with the spin move for his touchdown, but also the 26-yarder. And then Deion Smith did it with his first touchdown. Yeah. And let's talk about this kid, because, you know, some people were saying, oh, he's Smith, he wears number 6. They're thinking the guy that won the Heisman last year. I would say, okay, pump the brakes. But then again, here I am saying, has anyone seen Deion Smith and Justin Jefferson in the same room? Because I'm just throwing it out there. That's the comparison that comes up all the time. That's the comparison Coach O used in the postgame today, in the preseason, and we saw it today, both with the ability to go up and make a play in the end zone like he did early, or the 40-yarder to burn behind, or I don't even know how long it was, but the one on the left sideline where he literally did the Justin Jefferson versus Clemson two-footed stop, let everyone keep going past you and then cut the other way. God, he's special, a special athlete.
So there were so many bright moments for young receivers in training camp, and we would go to the scrimmages, and it almost be like a different guy every single time. Yep. But I can say this, like, no matter who it was that week, and I'd say I'd go to a coach or someone on the staff, and I'd say, man, how about, you know, player A? And every time, to a man, when I would say that, they go, yeah, Deion Smith, though. I swear, like, I was like, and I full disclosure, I did not see it because I didn't go to every practice. No. We go to a bunch of practices. We go to every scrimmage that we can. We're out there a lot, but we're certainly not there day in and day out every single practice. And every time I would say whatever about this player, like, yeah, him for sure, but what about Deion Smith? So that always told me, okay, they see something special here pretty early. And even in the season, like, this is certainly the first time that we've seen it out there on the field, but this is a special young group, and he is part of that group. And for your quarterback, I love to see it. Max just said, you know what? I'm going to trust my guys. I'm going to throw it down the field. Your corner is not going to be better than the guys that I've seen day in and day out since they've been here. And you throw it up, and your guy goes and makes a play. How many times do we see Jamar and Justin do that? Joe know it. He right. He sees one-on-one coverage. There's no way you can stop my guy. And I felt that for the first time tonight, and it was really good to see. And the coaches believe in him. Like I said, every time you brought up somebody, they tried to say, yeah, it's great. Yeah, he's going to be good, but Deion Smith. So this is the first time that I've really been able to see him in his full potential, and he is he is something special. Whenever you can do the things he did tonight, there's going to be plenty more playing time for him. But there's going to be playing time for Brian Thomas. There's going to be playing time for, you know, Jack Besh, as we're sitting here talking. Certainly, Kayshon Boutte, only a true sophomore. Malik Nabers at some point. I've just seen him be dominant as well. It was good to see him back out there for the first time. So it's a special group, man. It's a special group. We knew it in recruiting, but when you start to see it come out in real life on the field, it's going to be something where we're talking about this group like, hey, remember those five receivers they signed back in 2020 or 2021 class?
So exuberance so far has generated the most minutes of conversation. We went a while there on exuberance. Do you have a third word for us? Because if you don't, I have one prepared.
You're the wordsmith, so okay. I mean, I'm not taking
so
this.
I'm going to pivot to defense for now. We're going to come back to the offense. My third word for the episode is going to be chaos, and that's going to be in reference to the defense. And that's a good thing and a bad thing. The good side of chaos is what LSU continues to do in the pass rush and in the tackle for loss game and the negative play game, but also today in the turnover game. So yet again, LSU had five sacks, led by B.J. Ojulari with 2.5, and then a bunch of guys with a half a sack each. Jarrell Cherry got a sack there at the end. But then you also had 15 tackles for loss. So LSU came into the game leading the nation in sacks. They'll still lead the nation in sacks after today. And I didn't check the tackle for loss stats. They got to be way up there. So that's negative plays change everything for the defense. And then they added in the turnover today and the conversion of the turnover to a touchdown. So we'll start with that aspect of it, with Stingley forcing the fumble, with Andre Anthony picking it up, racing to the end zone, and then Major Burns also getting a pick. What you saw from the defense early was dominance at the line of scrimmage and then playmaking on the back end, which, you know, week one there were some issues. Week two we saw the dominance, but, you know, an inferior opponent, a Southland Conference opponent. This week a little bit of a step up, I think, and then still that dominance, but then the playmaking on the back end, the chaos generation, both getting into the backfield and then making plays in the secondary.
So the defense feels like it's really, really close to being where you want it. Certainly against UCLA, there was things that you want to clean up. There was the first half was a lot of good, and then the second half, it didn't go the way you wanted, and a lot of questions were being asked. And then they come back, and I realize the opponent as well, but anytime you get eight sacks in a college football game, you need to celebrate that. And I thought they played much better communication-wise. There were some things tonight that I think were even more of an improvement. Like you saw early in the game, they tried to throw it out wide, and Derek Stingley came, and he was aggressive, right? And he held his point. He got the guy on the ground. And then the second time they tried the same thing, he not only got the guy on the ground, but he made the ball pop loose, and you pick it up there for a score. I feel like they're really, really close. You get a couple by guys back healthy that I think can help you on this defense. It's got to be Jay Ward for me, because I feel like if they can get one more safety to be a playmaker and continue to help with that communication, a guy that's been in that position before, maybe some of the plays that I'm sure you're about to talk about, the two busts, those kind of go away, because you had a lot of them against UCLA. You only really had one against McNeese, and then you had two tonight. But I think Jay Ward can really fix a lot of that chaos, that's the bad chaos that you're going to talk about. But definitely had more of an aggression tonight. And I want to point out the linebackers, because I thought that group played extremely well tonight. I think the guy that starred for me was Micah Baskerville. He was all over the place. Any screen or anything they tried to get going, trick play, they ran the old school Darren McFadden Wildcat. He blew that up in the backfield. He was all over the place. And they need somebody to continue to step up there. I thought Damone had his best game of the year so far. It's a group that in week one was was still trying to figure out, I think, a lot of things. Played really good in week two, but you didn't know because, again, you didn't know with the opponent. But it was good to see that group, maybe more than any other group on the defensive side, play really well because they're going to need that group. And that group got talked a lot about in the offseason. They got challenged, and so far you're starting to see them accept that challenge and play much better. Can they improve? Yeah, absolutely they can. But I thought Baskerville was really a star tonight.
Yeah, Micah Baskerville had 6 tackles, 1.5 for loss. I'm glad you pointed him out because that's not a guy that I noticed tonight. I was focused more on the line of scrimmage in the secondary and kind of missed that second level. A couple guys that stood out to me there, Joe Evans, he had a really nice series where he got some real good push, a couple tackles for loss. He was only credited with one, but he was involved in 2 there, so maybe they gave someone else the stat there. But I thought different guys up front.
Come on, give my 318 brethren.
For sure.
Haynesville Golden Little Tornado.
I'll talk to Todd Politz and see if he can get that.
That's where Nancy Hester graduated from, I think, in 1979. You know, gotta give my mom a shout out.
Big time shouts to mom. But the other side of chaos is the bus. And so I'm looking at the scoring. When you got up there, I think it was 42-7 when you came and sat by me in the press box. Yeah. May have been 42-14 at that point. But one of those was a pick six from Max Johnson. And we'll get to Max in a second. Whatever. 42-7. The 7 was really one bust. It was an 88-yard touchdown. And when I saw it, I thought, safety's got to have that third of the field. Looked like Stingley was responsible for the flat. Went back and watched the broadcast. They said the same thing. They said it was quarter, half coverage. Safety's half there. Got distracted by the candy on the inside. Gets beat on the outside. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
I think we're all tired of seeing coverage bus. I can live with that one. Here's why. First of all, it's a different bus than we've seen so far with LSU. It's not, you know, the crossing route.
Right.
And it's super fixable. Like, that's watch film. Hey, instead of turning your body inside and getting distracted by the eye candy on the inside, like, open up and see the third of the field or the half of the field that you're responsible for, and don't get beat by your eyes. That's an easy fix. So it's 10 guys that did their job, one guy that made a mistake. I can live with that, especially the way that the defense played elsewhere. Now, there was another one late in the game. A couple more. In fact, I think their final touchdown was a bit of a coverage bust, but you got some backups in there. I can live with those. As long as they don't become trends, as long as they're addressed and fixed, I can live with that. That was the element of chaos that hurt LSU tonight, and they do need to fix it before they go to the air raid next week against Mississippi State. We remember last year what happened. You got to be on the same page going into that game.
And you got to be mad about what happened a year ago, and you got to know that they're going to test you early. They're going to do all the things that they did. They're certainly going to do the things that UCLA did with the crossers, and let's see if you make those adjustments. And you don't want to see any coverage bust. If they pick up the ball and they drive it down the field and they play good offense and you're in the right spot and they just make a better play than you, those are things you can adjust off of, you can live with, and you're going to count on your athletes to be able to make the play the next series. But giving them a free one, that's something that's going to drive these defensive coaches absolutely crazy. Like, even though they only gave up 14 points on the defensive side, they're going to be crazy when they go back and they watch you gave them 7 free points. And so you just, when you have 10 guys playing one coverage, really, and then you got the 11th guy playing something different, or like you say, kind of gets his eyes in the backfield and he gets called out of position. Those are the frustrating ones, and those are the ones you have to clean up if you want to win football games. They have helped really minimize those, because in the first game, I mean, how many would you say? You have 4 low ball, maybe 4 to 6, whatever. If we go back and we charted the game, you had really 1 last week against McNeese, and you had 1 with the full starters in there tonight. You had another one with the group of kind of some starters mixed with some 2s. But it's looked better. It's got to continue to get better, because you want to continue to make them earn it, make them drive the field, and not just give them 7 free points there. So I thought the defense played its most complete game. I thought they came back and handled that well after giving up that touchdown, didn't allow it to just come in and then just really stay there and then have a bad feeling about it. So you like to get rid of those, because I think you're going to need to get rid of them as we get into SEC play.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the stats through the third quarter. That's the third quarter only stats. I thought I had them through the third quarter. I don't have those stats. I would guess that through the third quarter, LSU's defensive stats, you take out that 88-yard touchdown, and they look pretty exceptional. I mean, it's not like they look bad by the end of the game. Give up 284 yards, only 56 rushing yards. The run defense was excellent. Exactly what you wanted to see.
It was really good. And a team that ran... I know the opponent is Robert Morris, but they ran for 300 yards last week. Central Michigan did. So you came in and you stopped the run, even though they tried a couple of different things in the run game. They tried some jets. They tried some old school wildcat. They tried their same side zone, which was effective, not only against Robert Morris, but against Missouri in week one. So you did a nice job of stopping what had been working really well for them.
Got a word?
Because
if not, I can give you another one.
Oh my gosh, this guy has words. Go ahead. No, it's fine.
It's what I do.
It's fine. I told you.
It's almost in my name.
I was a math minor.
Yeah.
Like
English major for a little
English
while.
English classes for me, a lot for you.
Somewhere out there, there's some really terrible poetry that I wrote when I was taking poetry class.
Oh my gosh, please let that surface.
It's hidden.
Please let that surface.
I challenged the greatest hacker in the world to try to find the poetry that I wrote for my English class sophomore year. You won't be able to find
it. Are we talking about like Shakespeare? Are we talking like Sappy?
A lot of Victorian poetry. Okay. I was taking a Victorian poetry class. And so it's a lot of like Tennyson, Matthew Arnold.
You lost me at Tennyson. Like that's all I had. Like that was the feather in my
Alfred
cap.
Alfred Lord Tennyson.
You went to the second name, had to take it out.
Yeah, a lot of... you know, a lot of rhythmic poetry.
Yeah, naturally. Rhythmic.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It's hidden in the darkest recesses of not even the internet, just my old hard drive somewhere. So good luck finding that. I do have a word, and it's Max.
Okay.
Max Johnson, because I want to talk about Max.
Yeah. That is crazy. How many minutes are we in without really talking about a guy through five touchdown passes?
Through five touchdown passes, first LSU quarterback, shout out to Todd Politz. He's the first LSU quarterback to throw three touchdown passes in each of his first five starts. I know a lot of people got excited when they saw Garrett Nussmeier last week because he was slinging it and he was spinning it and he was doing some fun stuff.
Great body language from Nussmeier, by the way. Always.
For sure.
Always
for sure.
Great body language.
And I'm very high on his future, 100%. Let's pump the brakes. Let's remember that Max is the starter for a reason and put in context the start that he's had. If you take his first five starts and crunch the numbers and compare it to the first five starts of any quarterback in LSU history, they're going to be the best. Like I haven't done it yet. I'll do it this week. I know they will be. Different era, all that stuff, yada, yada. I get it. He's been very good. And what I like tonight is that we saw some different stuff from him. It was very clear. And I'll caveat this. Coach O said in his postgame press conference, like, our offense is designed to get our players the ball in space. And that's it sounds like a cliche. It's not. That's why you saw Kayshawn Boutte getting the ball in the push pass and in the flat. Mm-hmm. And maybe we'll talk about that in a second when we talk about some scheme stuff. But Max is very effective at that. He's accurate. He gets the ball to the guys. That's his job. And he does it well. But today, we saw two things that I've been asking for all year. We finally got him. Pushing the ball downfield and throwing outside the hashes. And they came out taking shots. Deion Smith caught a couple of them. In the first quarter, Max took three shots of 20 yards or more. He had four all season coming in. So they took some shots. It worked out. The first one of the game, contested. You know, someone might say, oh, they could have picked it off. Okay, that's part of the risk-reward here. And so when you take those risks and you stretch the defense, it opens things up, gets them on their heels, and it opens and presents the opportunity for big plays, which you got in the pass game downfield. So the downfield passing was very obvious. Max also made a couple throws. There was one... everyone tweeted about it. I think Jordan Rogers on the call tonight, he even commented on it. He threw a laser in the third quarter to the right sideline. I don't remember who caught it. Kayshawn. It was Kayshawn. He threw it high to Kayshawn outside the hashes. Probably a 15 to 17 yard pickup, but a throw that traveled, you know, do the math. You're the math guy. If it's a right triangle, A squared plus B squared equals C squared.
Yeah.
Pythagorean theorem. Just throwing out my math knowledge there.
use it all.
I'm such a pretentious a-hole. Jesus. Anyway, it travels 25 yards in the air, and he slung it. I mean, you could hear it from the press box almost. And Jordan Rogers called it a laser. And I said, that's what I've wanted to see.
Me too.
I wanted to see the deep throw, and I wanted to see that zip ball to the sideline. And because he was able to set his feet and he had protection, he had time to throw it and set his feet, he zipped it in there. And that was my favorite throw of the night. And it showed me that there is more to this offense that they haven't touched on yet, that they just cracked the pages on tonight. And I can't wait to see that fully opened and fully on display.
All right. So you already mentioned the Braves because I'm a giant Braves fan. Let me use a baseball analogy of kind of what it was for me. Like before Max was Greg Maddux. He was painting the black. He was putting the ball where it needs to be. It wasn't real flashy. It was getting the job done.
Great arm side run.
But, you know, he's just, yeah, exactly. Like he's doing it and it's like, oh man, God, Greg Maddux is just so good. It's just, but it just looks like he's throwing it, you know, 89 miles an hour up there. It's like, yeah, but he's putting it exactly where it's supposed
nibbling
to be.
Nibbling at corners. I love that analogy. Throw.
I saw John Smoltz.
Yes.
John Smoltz was the one that came in. He just reared back and he let it rip. He was going to throw it and it was going to be in the mid to upper 90s. And sometimes you knew where it was going, sometimes you didn't, but it was going to be fast and it was going to have some movement on it.
If you have a Z in your name, that's your, like, you're going to be 100 miles per hour all the time. Yes. And if you have an X in your name, you're going to be more crafty. That's my theory.
Okay.
I just made it up on the fly.
No, let's test that. Come back on Tuesday. We'll see if that actually plays. But that's like, that's what it was. Like, a lot of people loved Maddux, but man, they really loved when Smoltz came in because he would rear back and he'd throw it. And that's what you saw on that throw. Like, just know he can place it wherever he wants it, but and it might not look like a fastball to you, but if he needs to, it was good to see he has that because we were asking, all right, is that in the repertoire? Is that something that you can do? And we saw it tonight, and it's good to see that because you just said that opens up so many different things within your playbook. I mean, even there was one, I think it was like a 5-yard completion. It might have even been in the fourth quarter where he was kind of backing up and the pressure was getting to him, and he just threw it as far as he could. He's in the middle of the field, and it was right to the sideline, and you had a receiver catch it and fall out of bounds. It's like, that was a 5-yard throw. But he threw it literally like across the field, and his guy caught it. And those are things like arm strength wise. It's like, okay, it's good to see that. We know that Max now can do things like that. So it might not be a play that's going to be played on the highlights this week, but I know exactly the throw that you're talking about because it got me kind of out of my seat as well.
Yep. And they opened up the playbook for him. They did some different things with taking shots downfield. The running game was more diverse, a lot more outside zone than inside zone. It wasn't super complicated in the run game, but it seems like they're finding the runs that they like, using them, using Kayshon Boutte as an extension of the run game. I think Kayshon, I just clicked off his stats. He finished with 6 catches for 44 yards.
Yeah, it's 6 for 44, long of 15, 8 targets, 1
tug.
Yeah,
and they took a couple shots with him downfield. They didn't come through, but a lot of stuff in the flats to him, basically using him as an extension of the run game, push passes. I love seeing that. And so they gave Max a little bit more to work with, and the line protected him, so he had more time. You had most of your line back. You still had Xavier Hill starting at left tackle, but he played better. Having Deculus back at right tackle really, really helped. Hines, I mean, the whole offensive line played probably their best game of the season. So all that coalesced together to make for by far his best performance. I think it's important to keep in context. Like, every start, 5 straight starts, 3 touchdown passes or more. It's an incredible start to a career for Max, who just keeps getting better and better. Because he reminds us of Greg Maddux, we think he's older than he is. He's still a true sophomore. So exciting to see.
Dude, you're not going to let me get a word anyway because you're going to use all these like great words that you have stored
word right
up.
Here.
You have a word bank. You can't see it, podcast. He's got a word bank out.
Don't.
He's flipping through it.
I did Google synonym for deep earlier because I was going to talk about the deep ball, and none of the cavernous was the first thing that came up. I was like, that doesn't really apply. Yeah, it's a different kind of deep.
If you pulled that out, I would definitely call you out. I would 100% call you out.
All right, so get ready for this word. Disyllabic.
Oh, God.
I do not pretend that I am not a pretentious a-hole. I know what I am, okay? I'm a self-aware pretentious a-hole.
I'm about to throw like the most fullback word when it comes back to my turn. Okay.
You'd be thinking of your word because after disyllabic, I think everyone's going to need a palate cleanser to get out. But disyllabic meaning names with 2 syllables, because Jack Besh made me think about this today and I tweeted it and it generated some good conversation. The greatest LSU players of all time, or your favorite LSU players of all time, whose names have just 2 syllables. So Jack Besh was the name that started there. What's your next ones? Matt Flynn was on there.
Oh, gosh.
Sorry. Matt Mauk.
Matt Mauk was the one I was going
to
use.
Okay, Matt Mauk. I'm trying to remember the ones that I tweeted because I tweeted some. And
I wouldn't give Flynn that much credit.
I had to say that one for you. I tweeted Dwayne Bowe. Now, that one was controversial because some people said Dwayne is two syllables. I say Dwayne. I say that's one syllable. So Dwayne Bowe.
I call him, that's Debo for me. So,
that would work too. I'm trying to remember who else I had on that list. I remember who I left off, though, because.
Matt Mock was the first one that came to my mind. Debo's a really good one.
It's harder than you think.
No, it's very hard.
Do you want to know how I did it during the game? So I thought of it during the game, and I was like, I'm just going to. I typed in LSU record book and searched.
Jack Hunt
is a good one. I didn't have him on my list. There's another one that you played with, had a Z in his name. We were just talking about guys with Z's in their names. Great Lettuce.
Oh, my gosh. Why am I blanking here?
You played against him in high school.
Oh, Craig Stelz. Yeah.
Another good one. Now, it's hard to come up with off the top, right? So I did some search, and I can't remember what other names that I put in there. There's probably a couple. Oh, I put Thad Moss in there because he's a recent one.
Yeah.
But I left some big ones out. So it starts with Burt Jones. Like, leaving Burt Jones out, I felt like a dummy for that one. But I did, after I sent the tweet, I said, I'm sorry for the. I know I left some good names out. Yeah. I'm sorry that I spent literally 2 minutes making this list. Please correct me. So Burt Jones was an obvious one. Chad Jones, another good one.
It's pretty good.
And then Trev Faulk. That was the three Trev that Faulk, I was like, definitely. I can't believe I didn't think of those three.
I mean, I think you did pretty good, like, off the top of your head there.
It's hard. There's not a lot of guys with just two-syllable names.
Yeah, in my mind, unfortunately, don't tell Flynn. Went to quarterbacks immediately, so that's why I thought Matt Mock, Matt Flynn. That's like, you can make a hell of a team out of those.
I'm telling you, we should do an all, this is me being an English nerd, but like an all one syllable first name, one syllable last name team. I feel like we could have some fun with that. And by we, I mean me, literally me sitting alone by myself. No one else would have fun doing that, but I would.
No, I'm going to have more for you on Tuesday when we record. I'm going to try to create a two deep. Might be very difficult, but I'm going to try.
I know that people listening right now are like, I can't believe you're not saying this name. Oh, and there's like a really obvious name that we left out.
Yeah, I'm gonna
giving it one last search in the Twitter mentions, but I'm not seeing anything. I'll just blurt one out randomly if I see one. It's your turn for a word. Since I said disyllabic.
Okay, I feel like since PFT and Big Cat did the hype video, great job as always, I've got to throw this word in there because it's my favorite word in the English language. It is a word that I don't pass along to just anybody. You have to earn this word, and that's grit. Grit is something that means a lot to me. I'm surprised I don't have it tattooed on my body. And I saw a grittiness from LSU tonight. Because if you listen to the national media, I know I'm part of the media. I'm telling on myself here. It was trap game, worry game, LSU. Look at the spread. There's no way in the world they're going to be able to cover that. And look at all the things going wrong and all this, right? And Central Michigan's a better team than they're giving them credit for. It's like, well, no, Central Michigan over across the street's been talked about in a pretty good way. I've been over there. Like, this coaching staff knew Central Michigan, and they knew that they played Missouri to a 10-point game. And, the team didn't worry about all that. They just showed a gritty performance. I mean, they truly did. And there's so many different names on here that we could point to that we haven't really talked about so far this year. And it's guys that said, you know what, if I get my chance, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to deliver. And we mentioned Baskerville. It's not a guy we've talked about really this year. We mentioned Deion Smith. I mean, the guy that probably had the best game of anybody. We hadn't talked about him. We talked a lot about Jack Besh. Corey Kiner is not a guy that we've had a chance to see. And after the first 2 weeks, and we talked about it being kind of clunky, they just showed a lot of grit out there and said, you know what? Hey, we're going to go out there. We're going to get ready for SEC play by dominating a team 49-21. And we're not going to really worry about what everybody else says. So I saw a lot of guys kind of go deep tonight and really play their best ball so far this year. We could go name after name after name, but I think it's good that it's names that we haven't talked about because they stepped up and they're starting to learn their role and figure out who they are on this team. So no neck rolls out there, but a lot of grittiness.
I thought Stingley was gritty tonight.
I thought it was too.
Not just the forced fumble, the tackle before that, he was flying to the ball.
I love the first tackle he made on the night.
Yeah.
I forget who I was standing by. I said, ooh, I like seeing that, right?
He, and, Go ahead.
Just, and not that he hasn't been an aggressive player, but obviously he's known for his cover skills. But when you have a see a guy like that come up, make a hit, stop a guy short, then he did something we don't see a lot from him. And it's great. It's his personality. It's just who he is, and that's completely fine. But he flexed a little bit.
Yep.
Like he rolled his shoulders a little bit. And I'm like, okay. I like seeing that. Like, got some emotion out of number seven grit. Because that's a guy that you give him some more confidence. He's already one of the most talented players in college football. Sign me up for that. So that was great to see.
Yep. And then the next play, he comes up and sticks a guy. And it's a fumble recovery for a touchdown. But think about how difficult a spot he's been in the last 2 years where teams just don't throw at him. He had 3 targets on the season coming into this game. He had 30 targets in 10 games last year, so 3 targets a game. Teams have just said, we're not throwing at him. We're just not going to do it. I think he got one. I remember one target tonight where he got called for PI, where it was like, it was whatever. It's a whatever flag, like total judgment call, whatever. But he's so dominant in coverage, teams have stopped throwing at him. So it's easy for him to fade in and out of a game. You wouldn't blame him. It'd be like if you're a 3-point shooter and they just were like, hey, we're not going to play with the 3-point line anymore. Sorry. Yeah. Like, what do I do? How do I contribute to the team now? And he's starting to figure that out. And it's when they run at me, I'm not just going to make the tackle. Like, I'm going to stick you. I'm gonna get, what was it, 12 ribs? I'm going to get 12 ribs.
That's right. Get you a dozen.
Yeah, get you a dozen ribs. He got a dozen ribs. And so he's starting to show a little bit of that. He did media after the game. Little thing, but a big thing.
Yep.
Hey, I'm taking ownership of this team. Now, it's a lot easier to do media after a nice win. But again, baby steps, progress, that's what we're looking for. Progress would be another word you could use for this game. Yeah. This was progress. This is not – LSU's still got to get a lot better, and it gets much more serious with Mississippi State this week. Good progress, but you've got to continue to progress. I want to finish with one word. If you have another word you want to throw out there, please do. The last one I'm going to say is fun. And you mentioned – the hype video this week. I got to be careful because I'm going to get on my lecture circuit here. I'm going to get up on my pulpit and start preaching. The hype videos are an interesting project. Most of you know I've written the scripts for all of them going back to 2019. And this week we had PFT commenter and Big Cat from Barstool. And the whole thing was like, football's fun.
Yeah.
And I saw a couple comments, not many. It was very well received video, very well, because those guys are hilarious and they do a great job. And DP did a great job lining them up. Drew Marsh did a great job putting the video together. But I saw a couple comments like, "Oh man, remember like 2019 when all the hype videos were about how dominant we were, and like now it's just like football's fun." Okay, first of all, I've written all the scripts, so I know what the videos were in 2019. And in fact, go back to the Utah State game that Ryan Russillo narrated. It was all about how fun LSU is because it was an 11 a.m. kickoff against Utah State. And I was like, it doesn't matter what time it is. Football in Tiger Stadium is fun.
Right.
And so this week, it's like, doesn't matter who you're playing. Doesn't matter what the context is. Football's fun. How could you not love football?
Yeah.
And so that's first of all. Just address the that conception. I took that one personally this week. I'm sorry. I got to stop spending so much time on Twitter. However,
all right, I see MJ. You took that personal.
Yes, I took that personally. Thanks for comparing me to MJ.
God, yeah, no big deal.
Making me feel good. I'm going to flex like Stingley. But this was fun. This was fun. We had fun watching it. It's going to be fun to watch the film on this one and look at the numbers. Like the last 2 weeks, I've gone to look at the film and the stats. And I'm like, I don't want to watch this.
Yeah.
I don't want to tweet out these stats.
Right. I'm not going to send you screenshots of me watching film trying to do a radio show at the same time because I'm like, what's going on here? Yes. Let's talk through this.
We're
going
to have fun. Like, like the last couple of Sundays, it used to be in seasons past, like on Sunday, I'd sit there and just tweet all the fun stats, especially 2019. And I'd just like be blowing up Twitter. And like the last 2 weeks, I've been like, I don't want to tweet these stats, man. They're, you know, even the interesting ones, I know people are just going to be like, yeah, but blah, 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 right. And blah, blah, blah. Now we can have a little fun with it. Now we can go watch the film and see some of the fun things that LSU did offensively. Now we can go look at some of the fun things they're doing. It was a fun game. It's going to be a fun week. There's a fun matchup coming up next week. Mississippi State. Football's fun, man.
It is fun. I saw a lot of teeth tonight. You see a lot of teeth, that means people are smiling. And people that haven't been smiling because, you know, right? You haven't played the way you want to play. Well, they played the way they want to play. And now here it is. Now you get to go on the road in the SEC with a chance to revenge a loss that you had a year ago that obviously is one that you took very personal and you want to be able to go out there and get revenge for that loss. Okay, that's great. And then, you know, then you come back home and guess what? It's another SEC game. game, right? And I hope my guy Cole Kubik's listening, because the last time Auburn won in Tiger Stadium was when Cole was playing, right? So you've got a matchup there that's always fun and intriguing and all those type of things, right? Auburn game's always crazy. Yeah, no matter where it's at, it's always crazy. Like something wild happens in that series. Yep. So that's going to be a fun one. So we are here. Tigers played well tonight. Let's continue that on the road in Starkville, right? They had a very disappointing loss, right? So try to build off that. Like, you know, try to take advantage of the things that you saw on tape that Memphis was able to do well, and go out there and get an SEC victory and just continue the fun, because then you get to come back home and it's you know, another conference game. It's going to be a great crowd in Tiger Stadium, regardless of the kickoff time. So I'm excited. You got to build off of it. There is a lot to work on, like you said. It's certainly not a perfect game, but this one was a lot of fun.
I will end the show on this note as I take my mic out of the stand. By the way, the reason I put the mics on stands this week is last week I was holding my mic and I didn't have this, they call it a wind sock. It's like the fuzzy thing on the outside of the mic. I didn't have that on last week. I had to spend 30 minutes editing out my breathing, because like the windsock takes out your breathing, and like you could just hear me, like after everything I said, I'd be like,
okay, he's doing it with Darth Vader.
Yes, yeah, it was bad. I sounded like I had asthma, and so I had to go in and clean all that up. It cost me an hour.
Wait. You sounded like the cops were super bad. Oh my God, he's a fast kid alive.
He's a freak. He's a fast kid alive. So I had to clean that up. I don't plan on doing that today. Hopefully,
I kind of feel professional though. You had the stands out, like with the mics in front of us.
No, it kind of looks good. Maybe we can get a camera in here, put some video out. I don't know. We'll see. Speaking of professional, I ordered some equipment. You saw me during the middle of the game. I ordered some equipment that I'm hoping is going to enhance our podcast experience. Maybe even allow us to go on Twitter Spaces after the game and take not calls, but questions from people on
questions, concerns, whatever you're feeling.
Yes, only if we win, because if we lose, I'm not taking your questions. Sorry. But because football's fun and because the GAs are here and they're about to start partying in the room next to us, I'm going to end us on this famous quote about how fun football is.
Put your hand down. You smiling?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football. Football's fun.
Fun, sir.
Fun, sir.
It's fun.
Yes.
You sure?
I think
so. Now you're thinking. First you smile, then you think. You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir.
Yes. No.
No?
Sir. It was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not by
now. No, it's not fun anymore. No. Not even a little bit.
No.
Make up your mind.
No, no.
Think. Since you're thinking now, go on. Think.
No,
is it fun?
No, sir.
No.
No, sir.
Absolutely not?
Zero fun, sir.
All right. Listen up. I'm Coach Boone. I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On that note, we'll see you next time on Hey Fightin' Podcast. It was fun.
It was fun.
Good times.
Night, night's a bowl. We fight the whole. The glory of the purple and gold. Come on, you Tigers. I said fight, fight, fight. Victory for LSU. We are number one. Victory for